Overeaters Anonymous birthday party, ninth step workshop, and I believe the title that Jeff gave the workshop was Freedom from the Past. Am I right?
Yes.
All right. My name is Roy. I'm a compulsive overeater and a miracle of mental health. I hear that laughter. I hear that laugh. Why would I say I'm a miracle of mental health? Who knows? Not one person in this room knows. How many of you have been in this program more than 10 years? Close. The reason I would say I'm a miracle, what's the oldest joke in the program? If you want to hide something from a compulsive overeater and alcoholic, where do you put it? In the big book. On page 133 of the big book, and every time I'm going to refer to the book, I'm going to totally spit in the face of world service, and I change alcohol to food and alcoholism and compulsive overeating, and I changed the text for our program because I'm also a long-term member of AA, and I don't care what World Service says because ever since they abandoned the circle and triangle, which Bill Wilson said they I might even have that quote here. Oh, don't tell me I didn't bring that. But I could care less what they say. You know, the purpose of OA was because we needed our own program for identification purposes. I'm 36 years plus sober. I'm 36 years plus abstinent. And when I say abstinent, as Harlan said in his workshop, Harlan and I have a mutual admiration society going on. We always attend each other's workshops. Unfortunately, I'm kind of adjacent to him today at the same time. But my brother lives in Scottsdale, and I always visit him. And I always visit Harlem and attend his 10 o'clock, I think it's Saturday morning, book study. And the answers to our problem is in the big book. And the circle and triangle, which is in my original third edition, it came into the program in 1955 in the second edition, says unity, service, and recovery. And recovery is the base. It's an equilateral triangle. If I work steps and have a spiritual awakening and start glowing, and I don't attend meetings and help my fellow compulsive overeaters, it's a waste of time. Okay, so the unity is my meetings, my fellowship. The service is the commitments I do. This could be considered service in a way. And my recovery is the base of the triangle. And that means I've worked the 12 steps out of the big book. Okay, and I'm a big fan of the OA literature. It's well-written literature. For Today is my favorite reader. I like it better than the Daily Reflections. I like it better than the Hazelden 24-hour book. I like it better than the Al-Anon reader. And I'm a member of all those programs. I'm one of those some are sicker than others guys. But the OA literature is brilliantly written. So is the AA 12 and 12. But they were never meant to replace the basic text. Okay? So when I say that we have a circle and triangle, I mean, I have to work all 12 steps to have a message, excuse me, to take back into my home group, to take service commitments. And if I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, it's an afterthought to go back into my home group and carry a message or to take a service commitment. It's not something that's strained or unnatural. It's, you know, Bill Wilson, if you read his story, you know, he's in the detox, and Abby had already visited him. And he's about 3 or 4 days sober, okay? But Abby had come back and shown him the process. And here's what he says on page 14. While I lay in the hospital, the thought came that there were thousands of hopeless, compulsive overeaters who might be glad to have what had been so freely given me. Perhaps I could help some of them. They, in turn, might work with others. He had 3 days of sobriety. But he had a spiritual awakening. Okay? When you have a spiritual awakening, you can't wait to carry the good news. You know, that's why, and he had one of those classic St. Paul on the Road to Damascus, the white hot flashes. And, you know, a real classic, what the William James calls in the Varieties of Religious Experience, a photism, a white light experience. When you have one of those, man, you can't wait to tell somebody about it. But you got to watch who you tell. Allen Ginsberg had one in his dorm room at Columbia, and he told it to the two girls in the next dorm room, and they called security, and he was locked up in Rockland State Mental Hospital. So be careful if you have one of these white light experiences. Who you tell. he told it to Dr. Silkworth. And since Silkworth, instead of saying, maybe you should go up to Belleville and have yourself examined, Silkworth said, you better hold on to this, because whatever it is, it's better than what you had before. Because he was in a hopeless state. Are you a hopeless compulsive overeater? Are you a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety? Are you what the book calls a real compulsive overeater? What does that mean? Do you know how to diagnose yourself as a compulsive overeater? You can look at the 20 questions. Or how many questions we got? 30, 20, 40? How many are they up to now? They used to have these pamphlets, right? I think they still do, don't they? No, they still publish them. Why don't you try the big book, page 44. If when you honestly want to, you cannot stop eating compulsively, or if when you put any of a certain amounts of certain foods in your system, you have little or no control over the amount you take, you're probably a compulsive overeater. If that be the case, you're suffering from a malady that only a spiritual experience will conquer. Page 44 of the big book. You need a two-question diagnosis, and it's in the basic text. It's all in the basic text. We're here to talk about the ninth step. First thing I'm going to do is tell you a brief qualification, and I mean brief. Why do I tell you? Because I like the drama or the center of attention in my story, which I do like telling. Arlene knows me for years. This is a nine-step workshop. But there's a reason I tell you my story. By the way, I started Light a Candle. You know why? Because OA never gave me enough time to tell my story. It was a classic case of a resentment in a coffee pot, as we used to say. The reason I tell you my story is to gain your confidence, because why the hell should you listen to anything I have to say unless you know that I ate like you, I felt like you, I am one of you, and you are one of me. So I'll just tell you, my top weight was 280-something. It's 180 pounds over where I am now. I've gained and lost 80 pounds at least three times, lesser amounts of weight other times. I've been on the phetamines, Stillman diet, pregnant hormone shots, liquid protein. I was an exercise bulimic, running 12 miles a day in Miami heat at high noon. Moved back to New Jersey, where I'm from, running behind a snow plow with a ski mask on in the middle of a blizzard. I will go to any lengths, to the gates of insanity and death, to prove that someday, somehow, I will eat like a normal person. And unfortunately, I was not able to prove that. Fortunately, there's a group called Overeaters Anonymous where I don't have to prove it anymore. And I can surrender to my innermost self that I am a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety. Second step. Well, I came in AA first. I don't say much about my alcohol story because it's OA. I will say that I tried to be a vegetarian, live on vodka and mashed potatoes for a few months. That did not work. Gained weight. But let me just say that once you come into one 12-step program, there's an old joke. You think 12-step programs are a bridge back to life, and you find out they're a tunnel to another 12-step program. You know, so I came in Alcoholics Anonymous in 1978. I haven't had a drink since my first meeting. I got over 36 years. And I'm a real alcoholic, too. And food was part of my detox routine. You know, I would come down off a run, and I would eat a pound and a half of marzipan to calm down the nerves, you know. I'd eat a half a pound of bacon, four pieces of toast, six eggs. This is my morning detox ritual for alcohol. I come into AA. 8 months later, I'm on my knees begging God, please stop this eating. See, food was my first disease. It's a kid's drug. I couldn't get alcohol when I've been fat since the age of 7. Couldn't get alcohol the way I wanted it until the age of 16. My first drug was actually food. My parents, my family are compulsive overeaters. My brother's been to meetings. He's not ready. My father became diabetic, kept eating sugar, wound up shooting insulin. So I come to this disease naturally. It's my family disease. I'm the only drunk in the family, but they're all compulsive overeaters. And I come into AA. I'm restored to sanity. I'm out of control of the food. I hear about OA, come into OA. And that began the journey. I come to believe that there's a power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity in this program. I make a decision. I want a piece of the serenity pie, not the chocolate cream pie, the serenity pie. I made that decision. The answers were here. And I made that back in 1978, and I've never left. Then I immediately follow that up with action, which means out comes the old sheets. You know, there you go. I always ask my guys to try and buy the long, regular legal, you know, what is this, 14 inches, not the 8.5 by 11 letter size, but these are real legal pads. Because I got a lot of columns. And out comes the inventory. Out comes the pen. Start with the columns, take them, you know. Then I have to read this to another human being. I can't keep it to myself. And then if I've done this process right in 4 and 5, what I see is that my problems are not coming at me. They're coming from me. Okay? And I manufacture my own misery. And I'm like a tornado running through people's lives. And then I step on the toes of my fellows, and they retaliate. And now I'm resenting them and eating at them. And I owe amends. And the book says, when we saw our faults, we listed them in black and white. I don't have time to go into all the steps and the way we do it, but I'm going to, because we're here to focus on step 9. But I can honestly tell you that if you look in the book on page, where's Earl Treat's story here? He sold himself short. It's about 230 in the book. If you look on page 263, in Dr. Bob's afternoon off, okay, he had me to the office. I guess a lot of you guys don't have your books with you, so I'll read it to y'all. This is the way they did it in the good old days. He had me to the office, Dr. Bob's afternoon off, and he spent 3 or 4 hours formally going through the 6-step program as it was at that time. So how long does it take you to get through this step process? Well, Bill was thinking of helping others 3 days out of detox. Bob made his first 12-step call with 2 weeks of sobriety. Okay, so there's no reason to postpone this thing. Now, today when I take guys through the book, it takes longer, frankly. But these 6-step programs were complete deflation. That's step 1. Food beat the you-know-what out of me. Dependence and guidance from a higher power. That's what we call step 3 and step 11 today. Moral inventory. Step 4. Confession. Step 5. Restitution. Restitution. That's what we call 6, 7, 8, and 9 today. And finally, continue work with other compulsive overeaters. All right? So the 6-step process, and Bill just basically broke up restitution into 6 and 7 and 8 and 9. Because if I'm doing the inventory process right, as outlined in the book, with a sponsor who knows what the hell he's doing, guys like Harlan I will vouch for, and a lot of people I will vouch for, my sponsor Zan D I will vouch for, I will be able to see where my problems are coming from me rather than at me, okay? And if I can see that clearly, that will give me a list of amends. The amends list comes out of the inventory. So if you're not doing it out of the book with a sponsor who knows what the hell he's doing, you may not see where you owe amends, frankly. You may, the book says in the connection with step five, we should be very careful about who we get as a sponsor. He should understand what we're driving at. Did your sponsor tell you what we're driving at? Okay? I'll tell you what I'm driving at when I take somebody through these steps. I'm driving at removing the obstacles which block you from God power. That's what I'm driving at. It says this person we choose must understand that we're involved in a life or death mission. Okay, if you're a real compulsive overeater of my type, of Harlan's type, as I imagine some of y'all, you know, this is a life or death mission. Okay, this is not group therapy. This is not a support group. It is not a diet and calories club. We say that in a lot of the OA literature. This is a life or death mission. If you're a Harlan went up 700 pounds. He took it to the gates of insanity and death. I was taking it to the gates of insanity and death. I knew when I finally came into OA, I knew that next stop was 300 pounds. I knew that because every time I gained the weight, I gained more. It was more hell to get rid of it. And then it would come back with more fury, and I was at a higher level. I did that thing where, you know, it's like a stock market chart in an uptrend. You know, it's the weight's getting up. Some of y'all are nodding. So this is a life or death mission. That's what the book says. I'm not making this stuff up. This is right out of our book. So if I've done the inventory process right in 4 and 5 with somebody who knows what they're doing, you're going to have an idea of your character defects and a list of your amends. Here's what he says. Dr. Bob led me through all these steps. At the moral inventory, he brought up several of my bad personality traits, such as selfishness, conceit, jealousy, carelessness, intolerance, ill temper, sarcasm, and resentments. We went over these at great length. And then he finally asked me if I wanted these defects of character removed. When I said yes, we both knelt at his desk and prayed, each of us asking to have these defects taken away. Remember that seven-step prayer? It says the wording is optional as long as it's expressed sincerely and honestly. My Creator, I'm now willing you have all of me, the good and the bad, right? I ask you now to remove every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you or my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to your bidding. Amen. Interesting, the good and the bad. A lot of people think I'm very egotistical and vain. Ira, my buddy from the Valley, says, Roy, your problem is you fell in love with your own voice a long time ago. You might say vanity is, you know, carried the defect. I'm one of the guys they invented the timer for, by the way. Well, because of that vanity, we got to light a candle today. Because I got pissed off. They weren't giving me enough time in OA to tell my story. See, according to this process, I don't get to decide what goes and what stays. God decides what goes and what stays. And some of these defects may be put to use. Bill Wilson was a grandiose, ambitious, type A personality, a megalomaniac with an inferiority complex. He always wanted to be a big shot, okay, as a compensation mechanism. Perfect guy to start Alcoholics Anonymous. Roseanne S., may she rest in peace, the founder of our fellowship, was this typical middle-class housewife, you know, had secretarial school background, got along with the women, you know, totally non-threatening to the women. Perfect person to start OA. And when I came in, it was nothing but woman. I think I was the only guy at my first meeting. God will use us. We're here to do his bidding. We don't get to decide what goes and what stays. So we go into this fourth and fifth step process. We analyze these defects. He says, he asked me if I wanted to have these defects of character removed. When I said yes, we both knelt at his desk and prayed, each of us asking to have these defects taken away. This picture is still vivid. If I live to be 100, it will always stand out in my mind. It was very impressive, and I wish that every OA could have the benefit of this type of sponsorship today. Dr. Bob always emphasized the religious angle very strongly, and I think it helped. I know it helped me. The book says in Chapter 7, we emphasize the spiritual angle. I let my sponsee know, this is not group therapy. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychological counselor. I'm not here to tell you who to date, what job you should have. I'm here to take you through a spiritual process where God will remove what blocks you from him. Okay? And the key to 8 and 9 is that if I do 4 and 5 right, I kind of know what my faults are and I have my list of people whom I've harmed. And the fact that I get the power to go into 8 and 9 shows that I'm really willing to give up the defect. Because if not, I'll do something to you, say I'm sorry, and do the same thing the next day. An apology is not an amend. That's one of the things we're going to go into today. What does the book say? A remorseful muttering of I'm sorry will not fill the bill. That's what the book says. An apology and amend are two different things. And I've done a third step prayer with a guy on the knees, gave him the inventory, and that's the last time I ever saw him. So he hasn't really done his third step. I know he's done his third step when he shows up with something written on his fourth step. And then when I'm listening to his fourth step in the fifth step, and I feel he really has withheld nothing and he let it all hang out, and he's let everything out, the book says, I will not find enough of fearlessness and humility until I've told someone else all my life story, all being italicized in the book. And when something's italicized in the book, it's Bill Wilson screaming at us. Okay? But I feel he's let it all hang out in the fifth step. I know he's done his fourth step. And then we analyze his defects, and I'm listening to it, and I'm making notes. All right, you screwed over that guy or screwed over her. I'm making notes about his defects, his faults. It says we listed our faults and put them out in black and white. And I'm making a list of people I think he's harmed with his behavior. And then I said, all right, are you ready to have these defects removed? And the book has some very, do you ever notice how short the 6 and 7 step are in the big book? Did you ever wonder why it's so short in the big book, and yet there's like a whole chapter in here and a whole chapter here on 6 and 7? Have you ever wondered? Well, I'm about to explain why. because they're so short in the book. Because, well, there's two main reasons. One is they're nothing more than steps of analysis and prayer. If you've done 4 and 5 right, the sixth step in the book is just asking, are you ready? Well, let me find it. I don't want to misquote it. Here we go. We're going to ask simple questions. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. So here's the first question. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all things we admitted are objectionable? If you've done those columns right and those deep, you realize that if you continue to do that behavior, that same jerk will be on your resentment list. The book has one of the greatest throwaway lines. We turn to this list because it holds the key to the future. If I do not make amends for this stuff, I'm going to recreate that list. Might be a different face, different name, slightly different details in the particulars of the incident. It's going to be the same thing. If I'm angry, I'm going to continue to collide with the other angry people. If I'm dishonest, I will continue to owe financial amends. If I'm mistreating women, I'm going to continue to have that problem in my life. So we ask, are we ready to let God remove them? Not me. Okay, God. Can he take them all? Well, first of all, it says, which we have admitted are objectionable. It says, is this behavior objectionable to you? Do you realize that if you don't give it up, you're going to have the same kind of asshole on that list next year? Okay? Can he take them all, every one? If we still cling to something, we'll not let go. We ask God to help us to be willing. I said, are you clinging to something? Is there somebody on that list that you don't want to make amends to? Chances are, if he says, well, I'm not going to make amends to that guy. This is how 8 and 9 are tied into 6 and 7. Every step confirms the previous step, if you're working out of the book, you see. And I say, you say you find this kind of behavior objectionable, this kind of person on your list objectionable. Well, this is what you did to put up. This is your part. You take 100% responsibility for your 1%. Or 90, you know, if 99% he's out of line, I did 1% to put his name on the list. I have to clean up that 1%. And if he's not willing to clean that up, see, this is how 8 and 9 are tied into 6 or 7, he's going to probably repeat that defect. It took me 14 years to get cash register honesty in the program. You know what got me cash register honesty? Paying back the money. It's that simple. 8 and 9 affirms the fact that I'm really willing to give up the defects in 6 and 7. Okay? So then we say a simple prayer. The 7-step prayer. I'm now willing to have all of me good and bad. I pray, and remember, he gets to decide what stays and what goes. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect to carry which stands in the way of my usefulness. Usefulness is an important word in the book. You know, it's part of the promises. You're going to find a new way of life that's immensely more satisfying than the way we life had before. We can be a real use to other people. Okay, remember page 52, the bedevilments? Mm-hmm. We could not seem to be of real use to other people. If we do this work, we get to be of use in the world. This is a powerful prayer. I'm really, you know, it's so short in the book, and you say, what the hell, is Bill Wilson on a coffee break or something? But it's an amazing prayer. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands away my usefulness to you, my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out here to do your bidding. Amen. So the 6 and 7 are short in the book, because they're really simply a matter of properly analyzing your inventory where the sponsor knows what he's doing. And we've already seen that you're going to go home for an hour and go through the first 5 proposals, read over your inventory, look at the real question in step 6 is, do I want this shit in my life anymore? That's the real question in step 6. Because if I'm not willing to pray for the power to make that amend, that's why 7 leads directly into 8 and 9. It's just 6 is an analysis based on 4 and 5. 7 is a prayer for power to go right into 8 and 9. And if I'm not willing to do it, I'm probably going to recreate the mess, you know? All of them, especially 8 and 9 too, are connected back to step 1. It says in our inventory, I'm going to eat if I harbor resentment, which means I better be willing to give up that defect or I'm going to recreate that list. It says I'm going to eat if my sexual behavior continues to harm people. It says that in the book. It says I will eat if I'm afraid to face my creditors. Most of us owe money. At least, you know, I'm still paying off an old college for some, I figured I owed him about $600. You know, the supervisor was away for 2 months, so I just goofed off for a few weeks. I mean, it was when I was a student, but I sent him $15. I made an amends for a term paper I ripped off from a college library and turned it in at my college. So I sent him $100. You know, I said, I took this out of your library 30 years ago, whatever the hell it was. So they put me on their building fund list now. I'm getting all these solicitations. But the point is, it says I'm going to eat my sexual behavior harms others. It says I'm going to eat if I can't face my creditors. It doesn't say you have to pay them off now. It says you make the best deal you can. Yes, I know I owe you $55,000. I can give you $10 a week. Now, of course, they'll probably give you a hard time, but you just send them the check anyway. Financial amends are easy. I'm going to get into all this. So I wanted to go, another reason why they're so short in the book and developed very well in the other literature is that Bill Wilson coming out of the Oxford groups, there was this tremendous emphasis in the Oxford groups that you guys got to be Christians overnight and have all your sins. They used to use words like sins. You know, we don't use that. We talk about shortcomings and character defects here. It's a little bit more palatable for us sinners, right? They were very adamant about you being transformed overnight into a perfect person, you know. Bill knew that wasn't going to fly with a bunch of alcohol addicts. See, we're food addicts. The doctor's opinion talks about I'm a physician and director of a nationally owned hospital that deals with alcoholic addiction. He calls it alcoholic addiction, which means that if you're an alcoholic, you're an alcohol addict. If we're compulsive overeaters, we're food addicts. If you're a crackhead, you're a rock cocaine addict. If you're a junkie, you're a heroin addict. If you're a compulsive gambler, you're addicted to that adrenaline rush. These are what F. Peck Scott or S. Scott Peck Fitzgerald, I can't remember. You know, the road less straight, calls him. He was a psychiatrist. He dealt a lot with people. The addictions are in the nature of character disorders as opposed to neuroses. Neuroses, you kind of know you're screwed up. You know, Woody Allen, he loves going to a shrink and he puts it in his movies. And addicts have a character disorder. They don't like to admit they're screwed up. It's called denial. You know, we don't, oh no, what do you mean booze is the problem? What do you mean, I weigh 700 pounds? Nah, food's not the problem. You know, if only they treat me better is the problem. We have these character disorders called addictions. The Oxford group wasn't particularly focused on solving addictions. They wanted to turn people into, you know, first century Christians overnight. So they talked about the four absolutes, absolute purity, absolute charity, absolute honesty, and absolute unselfishness or something. And going to ask us to be absolutely pure, absolutely honest, absolutely unselfish overnight after two OA meetings? I don't think so. So he left that out, and he snuck it back in here, in the sixth step, where he talks about we're totally willing to have God remove our addiction. In our case, it's food, you know. But as far as other character defects, we kind of want to hold on to them, and we have to take the best attitude we can towards progress. So that's why it's so short in the book. It's very simply, 6 and 7 are based on a proper analysis in 4 and 5 and a prayer for power in 7 to go into the amends. Remember, it all came out of one step, restitution. 6, 7, 8, 9 are all out of one step in the Oxford groups, restitution. In our later literature, and the OA literature is very well written too, it is developed. It talks about, you know, some defects we want to hold on to, we're not willing, so that we notice new ones. I mean, I've gone through this process many times, and there's always something new that I just don't want to deal with, but it comes up, and I have to deal with it. So there's no real contradiction. That brings us to what we're talking about today, 8 and 9. Why did he break it up into 2, 8 and 9? Well, it says, like, as soon as you do your third step in the book, it says we launched into a program of vigorous housekeeping. So you're immediately going to start writing inventory. When I know that a guy is ready to do his third step, and remember, for this program, I've taken people through the book for OA. I'm crossing out alcohol, putting in food. You know, I said, "Are you ready to do this thing? You're ready to make a decision. You're willing to go through all the rest of the steps." That's really the third step decision. You're willing to show up and do the deal. And I let them know, as the book tells me to. I outline what's going to happen. I let them know, you're going to sit down with me. You're going to tell me stuff that you didn't tell your shrink that you were paying $100 an hour to. or your best friend, or your priest. You're going to write down everybody you've hurt. You're going to write down the sexual transgressions you made. You're going to write down anybody that you have harmed. You're going to write down the money you've stolen. Okay? Now, this is scary stuff. So why am I telling them this? Because I don't want to waste my time. The book tells me in chapter 7, don't waste time chasing a man who won't work with you. I'm going to let him know what we're going to do. Because I don't want to be, 2 months into this thing and have him bail out on me, which I've had. So I let him know what we're going to do ahead of time. And then it says in the third step decision, we thought well before making this decision. The prayer thing is just a ritual affirmation that you're really going to do it. I let him know. I said, you better, when I'm ready for a guy to do his third step, I'd say, I want you to go home, think about this all week, what we're going to do. And if you want to do it, you meet me here next week. And we're going to make the decision, say the prayer, and bring a yellow pad with you. Because as soon as he says that prayer, the first thing you do is you start making a list of your resentments. So I take him through the process. And now we've analyzed these resentments thoroughly. We've seen the futility of the resentments, how they could take us back out. Every step's connected back to step one. You could eat if you don't finish this process. I drive that home to him. And as the book says, we want to live long and happily in this world. It's associated with the fifth step. I said, do you want to live long and happily in this world? And do you ever want to eat again? No. And if he says yes, I said, well, you're ready. He makes the decision. We do the inventory. We do the 6 and 7 analysis, and we say the 7-step prayer, and we're immediately going to start making amends. Now, it says all 8 is making a list and getting willing, right? If you're not willing to give up those defects and make those amends, you can have that list. You can make the list based on the inventory. I'm helping him make his list. I'm sitting there listening to his 4 and 5, and I'm saying, oh, you owe that guy an amend. You owe her an amend. You owe that money. If he's working with me, he will come out of his inventory with a list. But he can put that list in his drawer at home and sit on it for 20 years. So that 8th step is 2 parts, isn't it? You make the list and you become willing. Now, why would you become willing? Why do you think? Anybody got any ideas? I already gave you one hint. You may eat over it again. And if you don't give up this defect and make this amend, get rid of this resentment, you're going to recreate this bullshit in your life. The real question for step 6 is, do you want this shit in your life anymore? And that includes compulsive overeating. Okay? So that's why 8 and 9 are separate. It's making a list, which will come out of the inventory, and then the willingness, which has to come out of, do you really realize to your innermost self, never mind what you're saying to me or at meetings, that if you don't do this, you could eat over this stuff again. Or, at the very least, recreate this kind of a mess. You know, and I'm always looking for patterns in the inventory. That, you know, this has happened. You hear this in Al-Anon. I remember Al-Anon. Well, my father was an alcoholic. My first husband was an alcoholic. My next boyfriend was an abusive alcoholic. And currently I'm involved with a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he's worse than any of them, you know. And they tell you in Al-Anon, did it ever occur to you that your picker is broken? You know, these are patterns. People have these patterns in their lives. I did, certainly. I always had the same kind of assholes on my list. Why? Because I was that kind of asshole. If I'm a thief, I will fall in amongst thieves. Anger will begin anger. As I sow, so shall I reap. You understand? This process here shows me the inevitability. It holds the key to the future. It shows me the messes I will continue to create in my life. So that's why I get willing, because I don't want this shit in my life anymore. So I got a list, and now I'm willing. So now we're going to talk about step 9. Everything I just told you is just introductory. I hope I didn't confuse you. But they're all connected back to step 1. Read this at the end. Please, anyone at end, we need your badge holders. Oh, if you're leaving, please drop them off at the desk. So in other words, if this is your last day at the convention, they need badge holders. Okay, thank you. Badge holder. They need these little plastic holders. Thank you, Arlene. Let me read some here. Here's some, what, this is a book, this is not Conference of Biblical Literature. You have these various gurus doing book workshops. We do it here at the OA works, at the birthday party. Yeah. Right? We're messenger boys. That's all we are. We're not higher powers. We're not your sponsor. We're just here to do service. Herb Kay is well known. He puts on one in Culver City. Some of you guys know Herb Kay. You know that Susan L. and Marcy put on one, right? They got it from, I think, Samuel down in the hood. I've been to his workshop. He's good. Not as good as me. He's good. And I'm sober and lying. Be from any other lightweight. But this is from Dan S., Big Book Awakening. You can get down here and have some here if you want. I don't make any money off this. It's all, you know. He does, but I don't. They're not Conference of Biblical Literature. Herb King's got a couple books. Joe and Charlie, have you heard of Joe and Charlie, the big book guys? You never heard of Joe and Charlie? Some of you guys have. They're the original book thumpers. You can get their tapes on the internet. They died. Both of them died recently. Joe McQuarrie, he had a book called A Program for You. Excellent. It's all about this process. These are not substitutes for the big book. There is no substitute for a sponsor who knows we're involved in a life or death mission. This is a quote from the book. And who knows what we're driving at. And it was done the steps out of the book. That's called experience. And you only get that from doing it yourself. And I'm better at it today than I was previously, naturally. But here are the questions that I ask somebody when he's coming up on his eighth and ninth step. Okay? Do you believe you'll need more action? Right? What does the book say? Now we need more action. This is after you've done your sixth and seventh step prayer. This is on page 76. We need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let us look at steps 8 and 9. So I ask him the question, do you think you need more action? Do you believe that faith without action is dead? You think you can just do this inventory and now God's just going to remove these defects? You're going to have to do nothing more. Uh-uh. Like I said, 8 and 9 confirm 6 and 7. If you're not willing to make those amends, you'll probably recreate the mess. Do you have a list of all persons and institutions that you've harmed and to whom you're willing to make amends? He should have it. Certainly is going to have it if I'm working with them. Did you make it when you took inventory? That's when we make this list. It comes out of the fourth and fifth step if you're doing it out of the book. And these are questions all based on the text. You can read along. If you don't have the big book, you probably won't be able to read along with me. We're on page 76 now. Are you ready to go out to your fellows and repair the damage done in the past? This is why we're going to make the amends. Are you aware that this is an attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of your effort to live on self-will and run the show? Why do I have these defects? This is where the 12 and 12 is great literature. It says that my defects, the damage I do, is usually based on instincts which drive me. Okay? This is in the literature. It's in the OA literature too, by the way. They mention this in our OA 12 and 12. The book says I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-will, self-pity, self. I got to make it happen. I got to lie to her or else I'm never going to get laid. I got to steal from the boss or else they'll never pay me enough for me to take care of myself. I got to cheat the IRS because I hate the government. That's the only way I can get even with it. See, it's all self-will run riot. And we've created this mess out of self-will. I ask him the next question. Do you remember that you agreed at the beginning that you go to any lengths for victory over compulsive overeating? That's one of the things that is in the book. Okay? A, that I'm a compulsive overeater and cannot manage my own life. B, that no human power is going to restore me to sanity. I'm not going to restore him. That is a sponsor. C, that God could and would if he were sought. Are you ready to go to any lengths for victory over compulsive overeating? Now, I got 36 years of abstinence, and I mean when I say 36 years of abstinence, not only have I been passing for normal for 36 years, but I mean I've been a free man. Harlan, if you've been in Harlan's workshop, he talks about sanity. He talks about sanity around food. You know, I've not been obsessed with food. You can listen to my story. It's on the website, the Lady Campbell thing, whatever that podcast name. Roy L., I'm up there two or three times. I'm a real compulsive overeater. I'm a free man for 36 years. Okay, that's what I'm talking about. but I was willing to go to any lengths. Are there still some misgivings as I look over the list? Usually there are. I'm not making amends to that son of a bitch after what he'd done with me. Now we're going to get into that. That's called Now the question of the man of going to the man we hated will arise. That's in the book. Do I feel hesitant, diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis? And sometimes you don't have to. If you're making amends to the IRS, you don't have to call up the guy on the forum and say, I'm an Overeaters Anonymous now, and I used to weigh 300 pounds, and I don't want to eat again, and I'd like to make amends for the money. You don't have to say it. You can just say, I owe you the money, be businesslike. But if it comes up, you don't have to be embarrassed about saying it, really. He'll probably ask you to help his niece or something. Let's see. Am I trying to put my life in order? This is one of the questions of the book, you know, about we're trying to put our life in order. But this is a line that I always like to stress, and this is on page 77 at the top. It says this. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature in our first approach. This is like the IRS or something. We might prejudice them. We don't want them thinking you've got a nutcase on the phone when we're just there to pay our back taxes, right? At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. Now, this is the line. It's at the top of 77. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us, to be of use. Don't you realize that your real purpose, yes, you don't want this shit in your life anymore. Yes, I don't want to wake up hating this person. Yes, I don't want to wake up eating about what my, drunken uncle molested me as a kid. Yes, I don't want to wake up thinking about I can't go down that street because I owe those people money. But our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and to our fellows. You see, it's a spiritual process of purification, this step process. Okay, and my real purpose is so I can sit up here with a microphone and look you in the eye and talk about this stuff. And there's nobody in the world that if you sat down at that table that I'd have to throw this mic down and leave this room. Okay, that's our real purpose. Because I can't be of maximum service to people if I'm looking over my shoulder or ducking creditors, or I can't look her in the eye because I know what I've done to her. Okay, so that's our real purpose, man. It's purification. This is a spiritual exorcism, believe it or not. And I don't hesitate to use these terms. Do I believe it's seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our justice to him and announce that we've gone religious? Yeah, you don't have to say, I found God, I'm making this amend. You can say, I'm going to go into the details of how my crew makes amends. Do I believe that the people being approached, we call this the approach when we go to somebody to make the amend. We call it the approach. Do I believe that the people we approach will be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than our talk of spiritual discoveries? If you owe the guy money, he doesn't want to hear about how you found God. You lead with a check. I owed you this money. I want you to know I can't pay it all right now. Here's $100 down. I'm going to pay you the best I can. I want you to know I have not forgotten this debt. I'm going to pay it back. That's much more impressive than I'm on a 12-step program and I'm trying to build a relationship with God. You and I know that you're on a 12-step program and you're trying to build a relationship with God. But he's going to be impressed by a demonstration of goodwill, okay, or your creditors will. Do you believe it would be harder to go to an enemy than a friend? Yes, I do. I found the financial amends were the least difficult. If you lead with a check, they're usually well-received. Half the time, they don't even know you ripped them off, I pulled into the Mill Valley Market and said, I used to switch labels on the meat. I'd take the, flank steak label and put it on the filet mignon label, And I'd figure I owe you this money. And he took the check and he goes, I read about people like you. To this day, I have no idea what that means. But he took the check, so what do I give a shit? But I could go in the Mill Valley Market and face, and I wasn't afraid to go in the market. Now, here's the key. The most difficult amends for me were people where they, I felt, had done me wrong. And it's real care. That's why, and I'll tell you from personal experience, don't wing it on amends. The amends are the trickiest part of the program. Nobody writes a perfect inventory, especially the first time. You may forget about stuff. You might not even be trying to hide it. But, stuff may have just slipped back in your consciousness or something. But the amends are tricky. And I have made amends where I wind up owing more amends. The best example, The best thing, so what I'm getting at is the steps were meant to be done in order. They were meant to be done under the auspices and guidance of a sponsor who has experience. These workshops and these books are all good. They can't hurt you, in my opinion. Herb Kay's got a very big following in OA. People, Ron loves him, you know, and he's been like two or three of them. And he's good, man. Sammy was good. I saw Roseanne at Sammy's workshop, you know. But nothing is like a good sponsor who knows this stuff and who's inventoried it, and you know exactly what it is that you did wrong and the defect, and you really are ready to give it up, and you realize what's going on here, that you're involved in this life-or-death mission. So the men's that I screwed up are the ones that I kind of winged it and shot from the hip and didn't properly inventory. And I'm going to go into that a little bit more. Do I believe? All right. Am I ready to go to them in a helpful and forgiving spirit? This is in the book. If you're not ready to go make the amend in a helpful and forgiving spirit, I don't think you should make the amend. Okay? You're going to put it on the bottom of the pile. I'm going to go into the method that lately I've been using. Do I believe that under no condition should I criticize such a person or argue? He may be 90% out of line in what the situation was. We never bring up his 90%. We stick to our side of the street, our 10%. You know? Do I believe that's simply, am I willing to simply tell him that I will never get over compulsive overeating until I've done my utmost to straighten out the past? You don't have to say that, I'm an OA member on that, but you can say it, and if he doesn't want, like, you don't owe me amends, just forget about it. You say, no, I really want to make this amend because I may never get over compulsive overeating. It's okay to say it if you know, if the situation calls for it. And on that handout I gave you general guidelines for making amends. We're going to go over it if we have time. Do I realize that I'm there to sweep off my side of the street? We never bring up their part. Okay? Do I understand I should never try to tell them what they should do, that their faults are not discussed? That's hard sometimes when you know you're dealing with a real asshole. But that's our purpose is just that we can sit down next to the asshole and not be bothered. That's our purpose. I'll tell you one indication of who should be on your list. I'll give you some real quick clues. Number one is stomach jumpers. If somebody walked through that door right now, would your stomach jump? You got bad energy. Another indication is write down the people that you think owe you an amend. That's another surefire way of getting a name on the list. Okay? Those are just two little cues. Do I realize I should never tell them what they should do, that their faults are not discussed, that I stick to my own faults? This is a clue to the manner in which we have to go in a helpful and forgiving spirit, and my manner should be calm, frank, and open. That's in the book. Okay? My manner should be calm, frank, and open. And then we go into financial matters. Who do I owe money to? Do I make the best deal I can? You don't have to pay them back. It says we're sure to eat again if we can't face our creditors. It doesn't say we're sure to eat again if we can't pay them all back next week. You may owe the guy thousands. You're just not in that earning capacity right now. That takes more humility to give a guy a check for $10 when you owe him thousands. And you know he's going to laugh at you and say, what kind of bullshit is this? That's all I can do right now. If he gives you the check back, send it back to him in the mail. Keep sending it to him till your earning goes up. And people have told me that if you get willing to make these financial amends, somehow God's going to throw some money on you. Your earning will go up. You know, it's kind of like putting it back into the universe and watching God do his thing, you know. This is not therapy, man. This is a spiritual process. God's got a lot of money. More than I do, that's for sure. Do you realize you must lose your fear of creditors no matter how far you have to go, that you're liable to eat again if you're afraid to face them? Like I said, what's going to get you to be willing? You know, going back to the Haagen-Dazs might get you to be willing if you realize that if you don't make these amends, you're liable to eat. Do you remind yourself that you have decided to go to any length to find a spiritual experience? Once again, that question. Do you believe that you must be given strength and direction to do the right thing no matter what the personal consequences may be? I've known people that have turned themselves in on warrants, that have made amends for armed robberies. I mean, OA stuff is like chicken shit compared to the stuff I've heard in the beverage program. You know, we got some serious felonious people in that program. We got, you know, career criminals that don't want to go back to the joint. And they may have to do stuff that puts them in danger of prosecution. You know, this business about... It says, we make direct amends except when it did so would injure them, the people we, or others. And they said, well, I'm an other. No, you're not. There's you and there's others. And this book is talking about being ready to go to any lengths without regard to personal consequences. You're going to have to pay back the money. You're going to have to turn yourself in on the warrant. Or you may eat again over it. It's that simple. This isn't easy. That's why I like to like, the book tells me, outline the program of action when you're doing 12-step work. I don't want to waste time when the guy's going to bail out on me in the middle of his 4-step or his amends. And I've had it happen. So I'm speaking as an experienced sponsor. I want this guy to know what he's in for the next few months when I'm taking him through this book. Let's see here. Do I believe that before taking drastic action which might implicate other people, I must secure their consent, obtain their permission, and consult with others and God? In other words, if you've committed a crime with a crime partner and you say, I want to go back to that store and admit that I'm the one who burglarized and paying back the money, your crime partner may say, well, you can do it, but you don't mention my name. This is called securing consent. You know, you don't do amends when it's going to implicate other people. And I'll go into some personal stories. Whatever this, and now it talks about the sex stuff with the cheating on the partner. This is the famous sex amends. The book asks us to do a resentment inventory, a fear inventory, a financial inventory, and a sex inventory. And then a list of all people we've harmed, even if there was no resentment connected with it. And the sex inventory, now the wife may, or the husband may appear on the, both, you know, don't worry about repeating yourself. The spouse is on both the resentment inventory and the sex inventory. It may be on the financial inventory too. Don't worry about repeating yourself. The idea is thoroughness. You know the most fervent line in the book. We beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. So if nobody's ever done it to you guys personally, let me be the first. I beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start and get yourself a sponsor who knows what they're doing. We're going to have to go back and make amends maybe for sexual transgressions. There's one woman I haven't been able to find, and I think God is protecting her. Because to her, I am a nightmare memory. I am totally willing to make the amends. I acted like a complete ass. And I left her crying. And I was just so out of line. I cringe to this day. And I tried to contact her Facebook, and I haven't. And I got to think, it's just God's protecting her. But I am willing to make that amend. But I know that if she walked in that door, I would go right up to her saying, I don't know if you remember me. She might. I was that big an asshole. But I did such and such, and I want you to know I'm not that kind of person. And I totally regret it. If there's anything I can do to make up for it. I'm going to go into the details about making amends. I'm just giving you the general questions that, out of the book, we call these the considerations. We want you to think about this while you're doing this amends. Do you realize that you have no right to involve another person? Do you realize that selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept your home in turmoil? This is for you married folks or people with partners. Do you think it's thoughtless to say that abstinence is enough? You know, one of the great things that you hear in the program, well, I'm abstinent today, I'm a winner today. No, you may be abstinent, but if you kicked your dog, yelled at your wife, ripped off your boss, and almost killed people in traffic because you're driving like a maniac, you're abstinent, big deal. You're an abstinent asshole, is what you are. What the book says is people who say that abstinence is enough are unthinking. What the book says is cessation of compulsive overeating is but the first step in recovery from a long-term strained abnormal condition. I don't make this shit up, folks. I'll show you where it is in the book. Food is but a symptom of the disease. We have to get down to causes and conditions. This is what the book says. I don't know what your sponsor is saying. But we start, of course, by abstinence. Abstinence is a tool. It's like, do you know what the food plan is in AA? Don't drink today. They got an easy food plan. Ours is much tougher because we got to work it out and we have to eat. I don't say this at AA meetings because they get, what do you mean? I was a life or death thing for me. They were going to throw the book at me and I had 12 DUIs. Yeah, but once you quit drinking, you quit drinking. You know, we got to work this shit out, I think I'm allergic to rice. I don't think we got to work this shit out. But the people who cry that abstinence is enough are unthinking. Okay? Do you believe you must take the lead? A remorseful mumbling of that I'm sorry won't fill the bill at all. You got to really live the amend too. We make direct amends, but we got to live it. You know, it says in the book, a much more important demonstration of our lives in our homes, occupations, and affairs. Okay? So I can be abstinent and Joe recovery and talk from the mic, and then the DMV is ready to take my license away, which almost happened to me 11 years on the program. I used to have a RX-7. I had money then. I wore suits, believe me. And it had like 78 sober on the license, the vanity plate. Guys were leaning out their car windows going, you never should have quit, you asshole. You know, I was like the worst driver. And I had so many tickets up in Marin County, they were ready to take my license away. 11 years on the program. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies in our homes, occupations, and affairs. That's why I say this list and these amends are crucial. Because it's not only could you eat if you don't make these amends, but your life will not change. You're going to hold on to these defects of character. Okay? How much time we got, guys? I don't. It's 3 o'clock. I want to get to. Okay. Well, all right. That's all. 3:30. Okay. I want to go through. Let's see. Are you ready to ask each morning in meditation that your Creator show you the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love? This is in context with the amends to the family. You sit down and make amends to your family and discuss these things in detail. The spiritual life. Do you believe that the spiritual life is not a theory, that you have to live it? You realize that this is a way of life. The book calls this a design for living, a way of life. It's not just about I don't eat sugar anymore. It's a way of life. Okay? Do you realize there may be some wrongs you can never fully right?
Like that gal, I haven't been able to find her. Okay?
Here I am. I got something to talk to you about real quick. No, I'm just kidding. I'm sorry for interrupting. Do you have another one of these?
I got a pile of
them. Sorry.
I'm under-attended. There may be some wrongs you can never fully right. Don't worry about them if you can honestly say to yourself you right them if you could. I'm willing to make amends. Okay? All right, here's the guidelines. Do you realize you need to be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being meek or groveling? And that as God's people, you stand on your feet. You don't crawl before anyone. If you had a run-in with an abusive jerk, but you have a part in it. 10%. One of the worst resentments I ever got was because I insulted a guy, called him an asshole, and he threatened to knock my block off. And that didn't bother me at the time, but the next day, when he didn't apologize, this resentment set in, and it took me 7 years to get rid of it. And I finally realized that I will never get out of this resentment until and he was in France at the time, I was back in California. I had to write him a letter saying, I am apologizing for all situations where I lost my temper and got insulting. And as soon as I sent that letter, that resentment vanished. I mean, it's just, it's amazing how this process works. But we don't have to be meek and groveling. We don't have to, I know one guy, this is one of these book gurus from up in Jersey, Chris S. He had a sponsee, you know, owed money to a drug dealer. So the guy paid back the money. He says, is there any way I can set this right? And he says, yeah, take this bat and go collect $500 from that other jerk down the block. He owes me money, too. And at that point, you have to say, I'm sorry, I can't do that. You know, we don't make amends where we harm other people. We don't grovel. You don't have to do anything ridiculous or irresponsible in making your amends. Very good inventory, good sponsorship is the real key to having a good experience with your amends. And I'm going to talk about that personally. Let's see. Okay, here's how. I've been traveling for the last 10 years with a bunch of, they like to be called themselves big book enthusiasts. Everybody else calls them book thumpers. You know, guys like Marlon. Marlon and I get over my ham and eggs. But here's how they do their amends. They write the list of amends. Then they put them on index cards. They put the person's name and their contact information if they can track it down, the internet or... You know, there's ways to do it. Some people have hired detective agencies if the amends were serious enough. On the back side of the card, they write, what is the wrong that you've done? Now, the book says we made amends to all people we harmed. And Bill, in his story, says, we also sometimes have to go to people to whom we've had resentment. It says, let's see. On page 77, we go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Confessing your former ill feeling. Here's what Bill says. Way back if you want to know when the outline of the program is first mentioned in the story, why don't you go back to Bill's story in the beginning of the book. Listen to this. This is the first outline of the program. Originally, you know, I mentioned that six-step process on page 253. Page 13, Bill's story, right in the beginning of the book. My schoolmate visited me. That's Ebby T. Okay? And I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. I made the inventory. Okay? We made a list of people I had hurt or toward whom I felt resentment. There you go. I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals, admitting my wrong. Never was I to be critical of them. Now, this is back on 13 in the beginning of the book. So we're already telling these, like when I'm working with a newcomer, I'm already outlining what we're going to do in the beginning of the book. We're on page 13 here. Never was I to be critical of them. I was to write all such matters to the utmost of my ability. I expressed my entireless, let's see here. Where is it? Yeah. To whom I felt resentment, confessed my ill feelings, expressed, you know, I've harbored some, you know how, I'll tell you, this is AA history, which Harlan didn't go into. There were two books I meant to pack today and I forgot. One of them was Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox. If you want to know what the guys who wrote this book were reading, that was one of the books they were reading. They were also reading The Upper Room, which is a Methodist publication around the world with Emmett Fox, which is kind of like a daily reader, and the Book of Matthew, 1 Corinthians, and the Book of St. John. And then with St. James, that's where Faith Without Works is dead, is from the Book of James. Dr. Bob's favorite quote was, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all else will be added unto you. I think that's from St. Paul, Corinthians. But this program started over a food fight, believe it or not. A guy named Frank Bookman was a Lutheran minister. One of the other book I meant to bring was Garth Lean's On the Tail of a Comet, which is the biography of Frank Bookman, who started the Oxford Group. This whole process started over a food fight. Frank Bookman was a Lutheran minister who wanted to carry the word of God. He went to Germany. He's from Pennsylvania, Dutch country, you know, German, Amish, that, you know, Swiss German, you know. He saw in Germany that a lot of the Lutherans, he was a Lutheran, had started these hostels on the outskirts of the slums, Berlin and stuff, and they took these slum kids who were getting abused by drunken fathers and malnourished and neglected, and they put them in these hostels and gave them three hots and a cot, three square meals, fed them, gave them some decent clothes because the father was neglecting the family, and tried to infuse them with Christian principles. They were Lutherans. He thought this was a great idea. He comes back to Pennsylvania and starts two hostels on the outskirts of the slums of Philly, does the same thing. And one of the big lures to get the kids who were being neglected by their drunken fathers was he'd feed them tremendous breakfast. Any compulsive overeater kids would have jumped at the chance, you know, big pancakes and sausages, stuff that they weren't getting at home. The father was spending all the money on booze, right? He started two of them, and he was like, it was his baby. You know what I'm saying? It's like, light a candle. I started that meeting. So I own it, right? Well, he had a board of directors, the Lutheran Synod or whatever they call them. You know, there's always the suits involved when you're dealing with organized religion. And they had an economic slowdown, and they realized they were going to have to cut back on the portions that they were serving the kids. And Frank's saying, this is unchristian, man. This is out of Oliver Twist. You know, may I have a little more? You know, how can you do this? We just don't have the money to be feeding each kid 10 pancakes and you know, bacon and all this stuff. This stuff's expensive. Frank gets a resentment. He writes a letter of resignation to the six members of the board and leaves in a huff, and it was killing him. He goes off to Europe to be a missionary, and no, he's not converting anybody. And this was his life's work, to carry the message of God. And it all started with his fight over food and the money to pay for it. And he can't figure out why he can't convert anybody. Now, he's not a compulsive overeater, he's not an alcoholic, so he's not in danger of eating or drinking. In the book, it says, for us, this business of resentment is infinitely grave, because for us, we'll eat again, and for us to eat is to die, if you're a compulsive overeater of Harlan in my variety, of the book, Hopeless Variety. But Buckman doesn't have to worry about eating or drinking, but it's killing him. It's ruining his life. It's poisoning him. And he goes to a convention in Keswick, England, of evangelicals, you know, the religion, they took the religion pretty seriously now. We're talking about like 1903 or something, or 1908. And you see, he's not in the big tent where, you know, Dwight Moody or one of these famous guys of the day was speaking. He's in one of these little chapels, you know, it's like this. You got your big speaker, and you got these little workshops going on. So he's in one of the little workshops. He's in a Salvation Army chapel, and he hears this female Salvation Army speaker. And he's sitting there, wondering why he can't carry the word of God, and everybody else is packing him in the big tent. And he suddenly sees in the crucifix at the end of the chapel, not the cross part, but the vertical part, the eye comes out at him. And he suddenly realized, it's me. I am the problem. I am not attracting people. Remember what we said? Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service. He realized his resentment is preventing him from carrying the word of God. So he realizes, he goes home and writes a letter of amends. Now, I just read you, we have to confess our ill feeling and express our regret. He writes a letter to each of those six board members. It's reproduced in this book, On the Tail of the Comet by Garth Lean. It's a biography of Frank Bookman. I got it off of Amazon. It was under $10 or something. And in the letter he says, I have harbored ill feelings against you. Forgive me. As Christians, we must love one another. He sends the letter, and the resentment vanishes, and the next day he makes his first convert, and that's how the Oxford Group started. You see? So this business of making amends for our part so that we can look anybody in the eye and not have that stomach jumper when somebody comes through that door is how this whole thing started. That's how the Oxford Group started. They developed certain practices like the four absolutes and the five C's. I don't want to go into AA history and all that crap, but that's how it started. Why? What people say, I don't know how OA works or AA works. It's magical. Do you know the book says how it works? Do you know the book says this is the how and the why of it? We got to quit playing God. You know that's in the book? When I got a resentment, you know what that means? It means I've judged you. I'm the victim. You're the perp. You're the jerk. You hurt me. You deserve to be punished. That's what it means. And when I do the inventory, clean up my part, I have quit playing God. This is the how and the why of it. We've got to quit playing God. And that comes way back in the third step. And I make it real clear when I'm taking a guy through this process, are you ready to quit playing God? Well, yeah, he says yeah. Well, do you know what that means? Well, I'm going to meetings. No, that's not what it means. It means you're going to sit down with me. You're going to write down stuff that you wouldn't have told your priest or your shrink. You're going to put down everybody you screwed over. You're going to pay back the money. You're going to confess every little kinky section. Do you know that since I've been on this program, I've heard everything but cannibalism? I've heard murder, incest, sexual deviation, molestation. Any cannibals out there? Because I really like the sponsor, just to say. Yeah, there you go. But this is the how and why of it. By doing the inventory and never bringing up their side of it, that's why it's critical. We never discuss their faults are not to be discussed. It's our inventory. The inventory is ours, not the other man. We quit playing God. It's no longer he's guilty, I'm innocent, he's the perp, I'm the victim, he's the asshole, I'm the cool guy. It's, you know, I did this to this clown and he retaliated. We stepped on the toes of our fellows and they retaliated. And that's how this whole program started, over a resentment over food. So you can be happy that you're in OA, right? People in AA don't even realize that. They're silly clods. Anyway, let's see. So we take these index cards. We write down the person or contact information. On the other side, what is the harm you did to them? You should really be clear. People have told me they think they owe amends to people. They didn't really even harm them. You know? It's really important to be clear. That's why 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 come before 8 and 9. I left an amend off my first inventory, which totally changed the course of my life, and it really screwed me. To this day, I have money problems because of it. I had plagiarized a term paper, and was afraid to go to this professor because I knew this guy who was total anal retentive P word. You know, I knew this guy. He's a jerk. But I knew he would turn me in and I'd be expelled, you know. There's no way he's going to say, oh, that's not, you're so honest, I'm so happy. No, that's not who he was. I was scared to put that on my inventory. Because of that, I never got back on my career path. I was going for a PhD in literature. And that changed the whole course of my financial life. To this day, you know, I have trouble. I wound up DA, you know. It's a tunnel to another program. You know. But I should have been a contender. I should have been a PhD. Instead, I worked for LA Unified. Just, to me, like one slot above animal trainer at LA Zoo. You know? But, well, that's political. I apologize. I just offended the entire school system. Anyway, I left that off. You do not want to leave these things off your inventory. You want to put it all down. And don't jump ahead to 9-step. If you're in 4 and 5, you just put it down. What did I harm that guy when I turned in that paper? He didn't know. He couldn't care. Who did I harm? Myself. I didn't do the work. I didn't learn what I was supposed to learn. The proper amend would have been to take the course over or do the paper over. Just turn it in and say, you know, Dr. So-and-so, I did a bad job on that. That's all. That, leaving that one amend off my inventory changed the whole course of my financial life. I beg of you to be fearless and thorough. Stay in the step you're in. It is so important to do them in order. And it's so important to have a sponsor who knows what they're doing, knows how to work out of the book. 5 minutes?
Five-minute warning?
I can't leave these people untreated. They're liable to dive into a vat of Häagen-Dazs. Well, I just want to close by saying, okay, we put the harms that we've seen it on the card, and maybe rehearse a script and run it by your sponsor, what you're going to say, and we never say, I'm sorry. You know, we say, you know, I did you wrong, I was out of line, I did this, this, and this, how can I set that right? You throw the ball back in their court, because you think you've offended them or did this to them, they say, oh, that doesn't bother me, but the time you did it, you let them tell you how you harmed them. You know, if I'm deciding what the situation is and how it should be amended, I'm just point being self-willed again. You can say, you know, I really did this to you and I was out of line. I feel I've harmed you. How can I set that right? Well, don't worry about that. But you know the time you did it? And you say, is there anything else you need to tell me or say? And you let them vent. You know, if that woman came in that door, I would try and make the approach, tell her what I thought I did wrong, and she'd probably agree with it. But I say, if you want to tell me how you felt or let me have it, go ahead. Let her heal. Let her vent. Now, you don't have to be abused. You don't have to let her punch you. You know, in that case, you get out of there because, you know. But you're there to heal the relationship. Making amends and making an apology are two different things. How can I set this right? Is there anything else you need to tell me? Any other way I've harmed you? Those questions are crucial. And then you can put plus, minus, zero. Plus is I'm ready to do it. Minus is I'm not quite ready to forgive this asshole. Zero is I am never making amends to her, you know, or whatever. And the biggest question I get asked by women, of course, is I was molested as a kid. What was my part in it? The answer is you did not have a part in it. There was no character defects. When you're a kid, the adults are like gods. You trust them. They got all the power. You have none. But if you're still holding on to it 20 years later and it has screwed up every relationship you have with a man ever since because you're always seeing that jerk in the face of your loved one, you know, the way you make amends is to yourself. You can put yourself on the amends list. We made a list of all persons we had harmed. Did you harm yourself? I certainly did. But the best way to make amends to yourself is to make amends to the others. And the general guidelines I mentioned, I got to get out of here. I told you, they never give me enough time in this program. I told you. That's why I lighted candles here today. I'm not kidding. General guidelines on page 5 of this handout. Once again, this is not a substitute for having a sponsor who knows what they're doing. Pray before every amend. Make sure you really know what you did. Remember, it's not therapy. It's a spiritual exorcism. The rule is we must be hard on ourselves but considerate of others. That's a general rule. We don't want to hurt other people's feelings. The approach is important. You don't intrude. You see somebody talking to her husband or whatever. You don't go up to them and interrupt and say, hey, you know, I owe you an amends. You don't do that. You wait till you can politely approach the person and say, you know, I really need to talk to you for a minute. I hope. Can I have a minute of your time? You're there to not to inconvenience them further or hurt them further, right? Let's see. Going to helpful and forgiving spirit, manner calm, frank, and open. Pray for strength. And you can put the ones with the zero on the bottom of the pile. Do the ones with the plus first to get more power. Do the easy ones first if you have to. Some people believe, no, I'm going to do the hard ones first and then the rest. Well, do you have the power? It doesn't say Haagen-Dazs was my dilemma. It says lack of power. That was my dilemma. You need the power to do these amends. And my experience is, unless I've inventoried them properly, prayed on them properly, reviewed them with a sponsor, and clear about what I've done and clear about what I have to say, and you can rehearse it. Rehearse it over the phone with your sponsor, write a script. This is what I want to say to that person. But you remember, God's in charge. The formula. State why you're there. This is on page 6. Tell them the wrong as you've seen it. Ask them how you said it right. Ask them if there's anything else they wish to tell you about this. Ask them if there's any other wrongs that you've done that you haven't mentioned. Okay? These amends take innumerable forms. You know, you don't go to a woman and tell her you've been cheating on her. That hurt just hurts her. You don't go to somebody that you've been scumbagging around the program and say, you know, I've been character assassinating you for the past 5 years and telling everybody I think you're an asshole. Do you think that makes them feel good? You go to the person to whom you have gossiped and you say, you know, I dragged you into my bullshit. I was jealous of that person or whatever, or pissed off at them, and I really apologize for bringing you into it. That was just my gossip. I had no right to character assassinate them. You don't go to the person and tell them. I've had people come up to me. You know, I had a lot of resentment against you. Oh, thank you. That makes me feel a lot better. You know? I mean, these amends are tricky, I'm telling you. Go over them with a sponsor, knows what he's doing. So read the general guidelines, see if the... I put them down there. And then the promises, you don't get these promises just by going to meetings, folks. If we're painstaking about this phase of our development, what phase are we talking about? The amends. You don't just go to get the... One of the big misrepresentations or misleading, whatever you want to call it, people read the promises at the end of the meeting. So some newcomer thinks, well, if I just go to these meetings, I'm going to get the promises. You don't get these promises unless you've been thorough about this phase of your development. So if you haven't gotten relief from the obsession to compulsively overeat, you might want to think about going through the process again. They didn't leave me time for questions.
No.
I have to put these people on my inventory list. Once again. We can adjourn and I'll take any questions. I'll be glad to help you any way I can. I hope I didn't confuse you or scare you.